Accession number 28743.
Hugh Richardson, Reel 7. Could you explain a bit more about how you ended up in Dakar?
Yes. In December 1942, I went out on a ship called the Empire Raleigh to Dakar and to join a ship which had been damaged in the Atlantic and was under repair in Dakar. When I arrived in Dakar, I could see from the amount of damage that the ship had suffered that she would be a relatively long time under repair. I had heard that a small office had opened in the town on the Ministry of War Transport, and there was a Ministry of War Transport representative who was going to be responsible for shipping groundnuts from the creeks and rivers down the coast into Dakar, where they would be loaded into the ocean-going convoys to the UK. At that period in the war, the groundnut was considered high priority for the oil which could be produced from them, for explosives and all sorts of other things like margarine and everything else. And they were considered very high priority in the war effort. So the shipping of the groundnuts from Dakar was a very important part of the war effort. When I realized that I was going to sit on this damaged ship probably for weeks or even months with nothing to do except wait for our repairs to be effected, I went ashore and went into the Ministry of War Transport office. And I found that the Ministry of War Transport representative was sitting behind his desk, and on his desk were quite a number of signals from the Ministry in Berkeley Square, London. I realised he was under pressure, and I said to him, "I can offer my help to you in decoding these signals for you, or anything else that you can wish me to do." He said, "How can you do that?" I said, "Well, I'm a radio officer of a ship in the harbour, and I'm conversant with the codes of the signals, and I can easily do it in your office." He said, "You are manna from heaven." He said, "Come, bring a chair up and sit down, and let's start." So we decoded the signals. And he said, "I can't believe it." He said, this is wonderful." He said, "I've got no staff. I didn't allow French people to decipher these messages, and they wouldn't be able to do it anyway." He said, "Would you be prepared to come ashore and join my staff?" I said, "Of course I would. I'd love to do that." He said, "Well," he said, "I'll cable the ministry in Berkeley Square immediately and say that I'm taking you on, you're leaving the ship, and coming to join my staff as from now." So this is exactly what happened. And I went ashore and stayed in his house and became part of his staff. He didn't have any staff. I was the only staff he had at that particular moment. There was a clerk who was sent out later from London. But I was the staff. And his name was Harvey Black, and he was Black and Donaldson, the shipping line in Glasgow, the son of that company. And he was a charming fellow, and we got on famously. He spoke fluent French. I spoke schoolroom French. And he said, "Well," he said, "your French is not very good, but," he said, "you'll get by." He said, "With my help, you'll get by with that all right." So he said, "You will have to attend meetings and speak to Frenchmen about the shipping." I said, "Well, it's going to be a struggle to get my schoolroom French up to that standard. But," I said, I'll manage it all right." So he said, "Good, fine." So we started an association in his office, and he appointed me as his representative. And it was quite extraordinary, because unfortunately, later on, He was taken ill with one of the numerous bugs you can get on the west coast of Africa, and he was taken to the hospital. And he said, Hugh, he said, you'll have to take over some of this work. I said, but I'm not capable of doing that kind of work. He said, you are now. You're going to, because I can't do it. I'm in a hospital bed. So I used to visit his hospital, and he used to brief me about the tasks I could undertake. And there was a Frenchman called Monsieur Bossard, who was an excellent English-speaking Frenchman, and he was a great help to me, and I used to take him as my help to the meetings, and we used to discuss with the other French people, because it was a French port, and we had to be careful just how far we went with the French, because they were Vichy French, and they were hostile. So it went on like that, and he fortunately didn't stay long in hospital. But I managed to hold my end up during this period with the aid of Monsieur Bossart, and he was mightily pleased. So the time went on, and he gave me more and more to do, obviously, as the operations mounted. We got a fleet of coasters organized. We went going down the coast, picking up the groundnuts from the creeks and the rivers where they were, and bringing them to the main port of Dakar, and loading them on the ocean-going liners back to the UK. And there was a mole, which is a long concrete platform, to be precise, in Dakar, which was eventually holding thousands of tons of peanuts, or groundnuts, to be more precise. That's the correct name. And this was an amazing sight to see thousands of tons of groundnuts on a wharf. But we managed to get it organized so that it was working quite smoothly. So he said, now, Hugh, he said, I want you to take responsibility for the captains who come ashore from the convoys. He said they've been ordered not to have any alcohol, obviously, during the time they're at sea. So he said, be warned. He said, you'll probably find that they're rather thirsty men when they come ashore. I said, I think I can handle that. I said, if I can get the supplies. So he said, well, he said, you'll have to get them sent up from Lagos. So I said, well, yes, that's fine, because one of our coasters can... So that was, I managed to arrange that, and I made many good friends amongst the captains of the ocean-going liners, the convoys. And one day, the MWTR said to me, he said, I've got a job for you, which is in some ways rather difficult. He said, the French admiral who's in charge of the port, it's a French port after all, and we are here on sufferance. And he said, the trouble is he's strong Vichy, and you will find him hostile. I want you to take these papers and go to the Lazy Palace, where his office is, and see this admiral and get him to sign these papers. So I said, and he's a Vichy admiral and he's going to be hostile. And he said, yes, he's going to be reasonably hostile. So... I took the papers, and I went there with some trepidation, obviously, because it didn't... Well, the sentries at the two entrances to the palace presented arms that I drove in the ministry car, and I thought that was a good start. And I got into this office, and he had adopted the Mussolini tactic. He had a huge office with a desk at the far end, and you had to walk about 30 yards before you got to this desk. This was a trick that Mussolini had in his office in Naples. And he was sitting at this desk, and he was covered with false medals, probably hadn't earned any of them. A horrible man, looked like Mussolini. And I walked up to the desk, and I thought, well, any minute he's going to guess that I'm not what I'm supposed to be. But I had no uniform on. I took all the uniform epaulets off and all that when I joined the office. And I presented these papers to him, and he was very, very cold. Admiral Colliday, I'll never forget him. He was a nasty piece of work, really. and definitely hostile to us. And he said, well, you're asking me to give you freedom of, brutally, freedom of the port. And I said, not freedom, but I said, we want our ships to be gain free access, because it's important for us, for them to do so. And we had a small conversation, and then he, fortunately for me, he decided he would sign. So he signed the papers, and I think he expected me to walk out backwards, as you do in face of royalty, but I didn't do it. I walked out the proper way, and that was my experience of a French Vichy admiral. A thoroughly nasty piece of work, but I got my papers signed. And this is the kind of thing which we had to do. We were in a French port, and it was Vichy, and we had to be very careful that we didn't upset them in too much strength, because they were really enemies of ours at that time, because France had capitulated, and the French Navy vessels in the port were marooned. They just stayed there, because they didn't hand them over to anybody, but they kept them in the French port of Dakar. So the time went on, and I was there for several months, and then I had a brilliant idea. I thought my wife was in the ministry of that dealt with the paper mills in London, and he said we must get someone else to come and deal with these signals. They're coming in faster and faster, and we're just not coping, and the ministry are getting annoyed because we're not replying to them as quickly as we should. I said, well, there's a limit to what we can cope with, because they were coming in, you know, batches of them. And, of course, some of them were connected with the movements of ships, which was very secret, obviously. And I said to him, well, he said, I can't employ anybody locally, obviously. I didn't. It's too confidential. I said, well, I've got a suggestion to make. And I thought, he'll fall off his chair when I say this to him. I said, my wife works for the ministry in London. And I said, she's perfectly capable of decoding signals. She's more or less doing that. That was a small white lie. She's doing something akin to that in the ministry now. He said, what do you mean? He said, do you think she would come out here? I said, yes, I think she would come out here if we asked her to come out. He said, it's a bit unusual. I said, I'll try the ministry and see what they think. So he cabled the Ministry of All Transport in Berkeley Square, spoke to the establishment officer, or cabled him a message, and he said that I had suggested that they send my wife out to join me, and she'd be capable of decoding the signals. And it worked. And believe it or not, I had my wife sent out in a wartime convoy, and she came to Dakar, and she spent the next few months with me in Dakar doing that. And it was quite extraordinary, because to get your wife sent out in the middle of a war was something that was not usual. So she came out, and she did the job marvelously, and she was a great tower of strength to me, because she was able to act as hostess when we entertained the ship's captains in our flat. And she became quite a toast of the west coast of Africa, because she was the only English girl in the place, and they invited her on board their ships and gave her dinner and things like that. And the thing worked very well, and it worked well for the ministry, if I say so, because she was able to play a part in the entertainment side of the business, and the ship's captains were delighted to have her aboard, and the thing was good. But, of course, the inevitable happened. She became pregnant, and we had to come home. And that ended my stay in Dakar. We eventually flew to Freetown and joined a ship in Freetown, and we started in a wartime convoy back to the UK. And this was the convoy on which I acted again in my role as radio officer, and sent the signal from the bridge to the captain of one of the ships in the convoy. And he and I had a talk on the Morse signalling lamp, and he had been in our flat so many times, he was an old friend, and he was quite amazed when he got my signal from the ship, and I found that I was doing it myself, and it was quite remarkable. But that is a brief history of the groundnut scheme in Dakar, Senegal, West Africa.
Did you ever have any trouble with the French?
Yes, we had a lot of trouble, because they were hostile at that period of the war. They were definitely hostile. They were fueling the U-boats on the coast of France, because France had capitulated, and the Vichy government were hostile, treacherous people, and there always have been, and always will be, in my opinion. They do not agree with a lot of things that the British government do, and they have no hesitation in showing it, and even today we have cases of difference of opinions between the two governments. And it was certainly marked in Dakar, because Dakar was a French, Senegal was a French colony, and Dakar was a French port, and we were really in great difficulty keeping the thing going. But it was so important. It was important that we keep shipping those groundnuts. They were absolutely top priority. And we had to overcome the hostility of the Vichy French and continue our operations on the west coast of Africa. So it continued. We came home to the UK, and I went back to the convoys for a time. And then I have told the story of how I left the Merchant Navy. But it was a strange period in Dakar, and I much preferred southern Italy when I rejoined the ministry.
How did your wife react to your request to have a...
With horror to start with, because she was terrified of going in a convoy. Naturally, I mean, it was terrible of me to arrange it, really, when I look back on it. She was risking her life, if you like, and a convoy to come out to Dakar. But when she had actually grasped the nettle, she liked the idea, because she had never been abroad in that way before, and she was coming out as a government official, and she was treated as such. And we had a wonderful time in Dakar, there's no question. And that was but the inevitable happened, unfortunately, and that was the reason we came back to the UK. One more part of the wartime story.
And while you were out on the previous convoys and when you were in Naples, what sort of contact were you able to have with her?
Only through the ministry. They allowed us to send signals to each other, and I actually received a signal from the Admiralty, which I've unfortunately lost. I received a signal from the Admiralty telling me of the birth of my daughter, and they sent a signal, a proper signal, to me, and said that mother and child were doing well, which I thought was a very good thing in the middle of a war, to get a signal from the Admiralty like that. But that's what happened. And the girl behind my picture in the other picture behind it is my daughter. She's now 60. A strange story.